Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, I set this whole thing up, and literally the second I push record on my camera, my neighbor randomly picks today to fucking weed whack his backyard. He's never on the same day because he does the job himself, so gotta celebrate that for him. So it's gonna be a little environmental here. Hopefully it doesn't really come up much on the mic, but it is behind me, so it's going up over the fence and directly into the mic. Today we're going to talk about an extremely complex, dangerous, simple concept called the deepfake fraud. Now, this is fairly new in the lexicon of conspiracy, so there'll be a lot of average people, and I don't mean that in any way, shape, or form to be a derogative reference. I would say normal as in normal good people who won't have heard of this. So what is the deepfake? The deepfake is an interesting strategy to pollute reality with fakery by those who know they have some bad shit that's been videotaped over the years. So there's a core strategy, which is pretty basic, that says, oh my God, they got all this videotape and potentially like Anthony Weiner's insurance folder. And so if that drops, it's going to destroy humanity and blah, blah, blah. Which isn't true. That's what they want you to believe so they can save their own legacies. Potentially there's a think tank out there that says we have to preserve the integrity of America. And if we ever find out that America is so goddamn stupid that they let people like Hillary Clinton in office, then we wouldn't stand a chance of scraping off the scum from our personal being, right? All right. So what have we seen over the last probably 5 years? We've seen a ton of CG, computer-generated artwork that is photoreal, but there's a difference. It's sort of an amateur thing, meaning when you go to a movie and you see a Michael Bay movie, you know that it's fiction. You've paid money to be entertained by a story and all that kind of stuff. When you go on the internet and you look at your home feed and Facebook, then you got a problem in that people are injecting stuff that's fake. They don't know it's fake, and they call it real, and then a bunch of other people get in and think it's real. And that's what they want. What have we seen in the last month? We have seen a video of Nancy Pelosi up at a podium, and they simply slowed down the video, which made her voice seem slow and that she wasn't thinking properly, suggesting that she was drunk at the podium. Now, you don't need to CG shit with Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi makes Nancy Pelosi look stupid. She is always, you know, she's like an excited person. So she's always excited to take a shit on humanity and excited to take a shit on another human being. And so she gets all tongue-tied when she goes up to the podium because her goal in life is evil fucking division and separation. And she wants to always take her Stockholm Syndrome, you know, captor, which is her controlling banking cartel leaders, and convince them that she's doing her job. So what is this deep fake thing all about? Well, we have had for the last several years on social media various computer-generated movies and pictures slapped into the overall feed of the mind of man, claimed as reality, only to find out later that we've been duped and it's not real. But in the same 3 years since Anthony Weiner has been apprehended and they found a folder on his laptop that said insurance, we know there's some pretty nasty shit on people out there. We don't know exactly what it is. There's a rumor that Uma Abedin and Hillary Clinton murdered a child in Lolita Island and had it videotaped and it was on that computer. Don't know if that's true. Hey, that was actually discussed with the CEO of Google the second he entered the hearing in the Senate, or the House Committee or whatever it was. So they've got all these videos out there of all kinds of people doing rotten shit. And what they are going to try to do with this deepfake maneuver is to educate the people that you can't trust reality anymore. Especially not video. We got the new one where Mona Lisa is moving her face and talking. It's wild. It's really cool technology. It's been around for a long time. But the guy that made the new Twilight Zone, he's the host of the new Twilight Zone. He didn't make it. But he went out and got an impersonator to impersonate Obama's voice. Then they ran some really kind of junky version of the simulation of Obama giving a speech that he didn't give. And of course, it's your leftist, hate Trump bullshit. But there's been much better simulations of Obama giving a speech with all kinds of different photographs of him being the template for the face, right? So we've seen some amazing work. And again, I've told you guys numerous times I was solicited in the video game business to use technology to do these face simulations. And they were, if you wanted to really push the envelope and spend the money, then no one would know that what you were staring at was a completely fictional being. Based on a real person's face, of course, but being animated by anyone at all. So the big maneuver, the big initial maneuver will be to absolutely injure the credibility of reality when you see it, which is going to get so powerful and so messy and destructive to the human mind that if you've ever seen a show where someone starts traveling through time or like subtle time changes, not necessarily like, you know, going to the future or something, but you know, 5 minutes ahead, hour ahead, lose a day, whatever, or they are experiencing some light paranormal magic in this fictitious series you might be watching, you know how the characters break down. And they lose grip on reality and they can't trust anything. And, you know, there's been shows that I have mentioned on this show that I've analyzed where you have it getting to a point where an individual kills a family member. But he kills a family member because he doesn't trust his reality. And he thinks that he's looking at a facsimile of his family member when it's actually a near and dear, very close family member to him. So imagine trying to keep track of the world where if you simply look at anyone animated in anything, the news, a commercial, a television show, any eyewitness to a bad situation, you literally can't trust it because the entire thing could be CG. Imagine victims to events that never occurred being created in a computer. And someone thinks that an FF actually went real and all these people are actually hurt and there's no actors. There's no props, there's no fake blood, there's no nothing. It's all just CG. Not a good thing for us to mess with the fabric of this. But man is completely unequipped to deal with this problem. Man is ill-equipped to have the conversation in any way, shape, or form, in my opinion. And obviously, there's a sliver of us that could teach the class on this stuff, right? And it's you and me. But the overall public, we have to have absolute sympathy and empathy for, because our parents, our grandparents, some people that are just absolutely dialed out, but sort of carrying an opinion, but they're dialed out, they're dangerous because they're going to be the ones that react to fakeness. Now, what's interesting is for the last 20 years, we know through the BBC's admissions and other intelligence agencies' admissions that a lot of things that we have seen that have manipulated people's votes, that have manipulated people into fearing things, thus sort of supporting agendas, we know that they have been manipulated by in-studio things. And so they've got issues. You know, again, the guy that was it the British DJ that supposedly did the first beheading, or he's all in black, and it's the first ISIS beheading, and it has the guy in orange, and he's in the desert or whatever. And then it was later exposed by, you know, Senator No Name's assistant that it was all shot in a Pakistani film studio, because 1 year prior, that exact scene was in a television show. And so all they did was they bought the same set, same director. And then, of course, the guy who's doing all the cutting, supposedly the fictitious acting cutting, He he's fingered as this DJ from England. And it's like, could you imagine somebody fingering you? And it's someone in a burqa, someone in a ninja outfit. And then it just goes on the news, it was you. Just because you happened to travel overseas. And they, oh no, it was that guy. So that's the problem. That's one of the problems. Don't trust the stuff that's immediately going to come out against people that are screaming that they're for, you know, the people, but they've actually always been for the deep state. Their record shows they're from the deep state. They never did anything for their country. In fact, they sold their country out 9 ways to Sunday. And so they're going to try to muddy those waters. Now, the second tier of this gets a little more dangerous. They're going to frame innocent people. Not just the big popular ones that you would name and you would be correct, but they're going to start framing everyone and everything. I'll tell you this, and I mentioned this a really long time ago, but this is sort of the subatomic fabric of how badly this stuff can occur. If they want to frame you for something, and again, if you don't have protection and you don't have the IQ, or I shouldn't say the IQ, IQ does help, but if you don't have the smarts to defend yourself against a framing job, then you got a huge problem on your hands. And it would go something like this. Like, if somebody says you sent an email from someone to someone else, it depends on how they're claiming this occurred, because an email is just a file on a server. Yeah, it has some scrambled headers in it, but if you're sending emails on someone else's behalf, you could send a fairly innocent email, scrape that header off with all of its unique identifier stuff, then later save it, upgrade it with a different message on the server. So you've never read the one that's on your server, unless you go back in and start digging around. But they can forge emails in your name. They can do it. You know, most of you don't know that when you watch television, and any time in a movie or a television show where you see an actor watching a television, a lot of times that is inserted post-production. They're actually staring at maybe some paused photograph, but because of the scan rating of certain monitors, there's usually some artifacting and flickering going on in the camera unless they set it up initially to film a television. So when you see shows that are like Mission Impossible or Westworld, where they're filming a lot of command center things, they're not filming a television. That's why Star Trek... all the series of Star Trek from the 87 and up, they had either superimposed, you know, the forward-looking camera outside of the ship, or if they were touching some of the controls, it was all backlit gels that were beautifully designed by hand. You know, it's just light coming up through these gels because there's no flickering in that. So it was worry-free. Brilliant idea. I mean, brilliant. So everything that would be added to a court discovery process to suggest that you have done something or haven't done something can be easily forged. There were, for instance, the Vegas guy, and I won't use the key word for what he's normally called, but the guy in Vegas who was on the 33rd floor, supposedly, I should say, doing something out the window against some people watching a country and western concert. They said it was him. They later showed you, because the big question was, how did this guy get somewhere around 1,000 pounds worth of equipment up to that floor all by himself? That's a lot of trips, man, because you can't carry, you know, you can carry certain stuff into an elevator and then set it down and then you're going to be able to lift it, but come on. I just helped my friend lift something yesterday that was probably 150, 175 pounds, somewhere in there. I'm probably wrong on that, but it was so heavy, it was like, whoa. And you'd have to make 10 trips as a human being if you were Arnold Schwarzenegger in his prime to be carrying 100 pounds of stuff out of a vehicle, through a parking lot, into a lobby, into a freight elevator, up... and then down the hallway, and it would take forever, and there was no footage of that initially. Then later on, magically, and only distributed really in within the conspiracy circles of the world, there was this footage that said it was him. Now we know, with the talking Mona Lisa, well, that could be anybody with that, you know, the CG face of that guy. And the reason why is that the coroner came out and said the guy died at 12:30 p.m. that afternoon, roughly, and so he was long dead before he was supposedly paying attention to the window. Interesting. So there's, who was the guy? I forgot the senator. One of you guys are going to remember. Let's see. Oh, it was Schumer. Schumer came out in an interview, and he was bragging because the deep state was still in full effect, and his candidate was going to win. And he, I believe, it was prior to the actual vote of the election of 2016, and he said, you know what? He says, and I'm going to paraphrase here for keyword reasons. He said, you know, the black hats have nine ways to Sunday to get back at you if you get them. Essentially, what Schumer was saying, in my opinion, and I think most of you would agree if you're awake, Schumer is a deep stater. He's a weasel. He's that Iago in any script of any movie. He's the guy that will stab you in the back the second that he could. And he has big friends in his mind, which is the deep state, you know, sliver of a single percent of people that are willing to destroy their country and the world for a short-time paycheck. So he was essentially threatening this candidate for presidency with what his big brother can do or what his dad can do or whatever, right? It's essentially the agency that keeps him in power. And the funny thing is it's something that you say if you're stupid. If you're going to play poker with a great poker player, do you show your hand? Do you give off indicators in your face based on every card that you have popped into your hand that is a deadly hand? Because you realize poker, it's a skill-based game. It's not a random game. And the second that someone smells you have a hand from hell and you're going to wipe the whole fucking table clean, they just fold. They don't bet. They don't lose any money. They bet. And your hand just goes right back into the deck and you wasted your royal flush. And that's what Schumer did. That's what Pelosi did. That's what Obama did. That's what George Clooney did. That's what De Niro did. That's what Biden did. They all ran their mouth because they never thought she'd lose. Now she lost, they got the problem. They have called on every artery, and you're going to see a lot more of this deep fake movement. You can't trust anything because it can all be done inside of a computer. Now, in the end, the truth of the matter is that we could actually have our own truth movement Snopes built out of special effects people, and I guarantee you, if there's anything that comes out on the web that is going to be heavily debated as being real or fake, there's going to be plenty of people like me and my friends who are going to be able to, what we call pixel fuck those images and find the plugins, find the smoothing, find the lack of motion that's proper. We will see whether, we'll be able to calculate in our brains whether or not it's an off-the-shelf tool, a custom tool, or real. We will. Now, some things we're not going to waste our time on, like the guy from Vegas. Why waste our time on that guy? He was dead nearly 8 hours before they said he started doing what he did. You know, I'm not going to waste my time on looking at the footage of him. I mean, I may out of morbid curiosity at some point. Now, it's interesting with the moon missions because this kind of fakery has been going around for a long time, hasn't it? I mean, weren't the moon missions one of the very first above-board fakeries that we've ever had? I mean, obviously the footage is real. It's not CG, but it's really not on the moon. Your footage of Mars is real in some cases. I do believe there's some... I put it this way. If the close-up shots of the soil and the little experiments where they're cutting little balls of, rock in half, if that is truly CG, then they've done a brilliant job. With Terrigen, well, You can't tell me that any surface that looks like Mars is real, because Terrigen can do it. It's phenomenal. And believe me, with a few plug-in coders, you could add even more granularity. With the right supercomputer, you could take products like Terrigen and turn them up so high that the average studio couldn't afford to render what they'll show you. But what do you get? You get still photographs. Now, that's a lot different than a moving photograph. But they could do moving as well. But once you start moving things, that's where CG stuff starts to fail miserably. It could be very difficult to look up a single image that's been CG'd. This person, you know, sitting in a hotel with a prostitute or call girl or whatever, doing something that other people don't do. Okay. Now, panning a camera on a terrain without anything moving on the terrain, that's not difficult. That's like a 360 type shot. Even if they're saying that each frame is new and being captured over time, that's not much that's going on there. However, if there is wind on the surface of Mars, and the wind gusts are going to come in and bounce around all the rocks and take the soil and move it, well, those algorithms could be very simple, and they could be very difficult. What if a rover got inside of got over to a gigantic volcanic crater? And so you might have a crater that's humongous, like Diamond Head in Hawaii. And then it would be, okay, well, during a big storm, how does all this stuff cascade down inside the crater? How does it blow out of the crater? Whatever. And isn't it interesting that my entire life they've told me that, just theoretically speaking, Mars would have pretty violent windstorms at a minimum, because it supposedly has a little bit of a atmosphere. It's not oxygen. But now, why hasn't any of these rovers filmed one of the most formidable experiences out there, the movie Martian, with Matt Damon? That's what it's called, right? The whole movie is predicated on a storm that tore the crap out of the place, and that's why they were in danger. It's the first scene. Why haven't one of these rovers filmed one of those from far away coming at them, or during a storm? I mean, you might as well take pictures there's a couple problems here, but you might as well take pictures because it could be the last time you ever see the robot. Two, I don't personally remember the way that the first two big rovers were designed that landed in the 2003-2004 era. I think it's 2001-2004, somewhere in there. But I don't remember how it works, but can you imagine having any sort of glass lens, or even plexiglass or something like that, between the camera's lens and the outside world? If that doesn't get shielded during a storm, it's going to be sandblasted into smoky filter. And so even if the thing is on and roving around, you're not going to be able to see. But we never had that problem, did we? Those lenses are always perfect. And you don't get shots that clean on an F1 race. At least when it rains, right? There's always some speckles in there or something. So I believe, personally, if the 17 movement is real, and in fact, that doesn't have to be the only linchpin to make this effectively something we need to look forward to and be cautionary towards. But I believe that they're really, really scared of a lot of things coming out. And you know what? They could be fairly basic things. We have seen a whole series of photographs of Obama in Islamic Muslim gear overseas, you know, and he's hanging out and doing his thing. Now, again, if the guy had just come out and said, look, I'm a Muslim, I don't preach any radical Islamic religion, I'm different, you know, we're in America, we could have a Jewish president, and he could say, I don't believe in Jesus Christ. What if Bernie Sanders became president? No one's going to give him crap for not believing Christianity, so Obama didn't need to lie that he was a Christian. Or he could say, look, I went through that whole Muslim thing when I was young, like a lot of guys my age, and I simply decided it wasn't for me. He could have done that, but he didn't do it. He kept up the lie the whole time. But I guess when he went to Virginia University, again, I've seen photographs of this. I don't know if they're real. They look pretty fucking real to me. But he had the Secret Service cover up statues of Mary, statues of Jesus. The picture I saw of him was at a podium in a church. And behind him was a Christ that was all covered up. So I don't know if someone synthesized that together. The story came out of individuals at the university going, yeah, this was really weird. I couldn't even believe this. And the thing is like, if even that's true, the weird thing is think about it. Couldn't you go to a mosque if you were invited to speak and be respectful of someone else's religion and leave all their stuff up? Couldn't you go into a synagogue and just leave it alone and speak even though you're not Jewish? Wouldn't it be easy to do that? If you were a scientist and you didn't believe in Christ, couldn't you speak at a church to share what you have without covering up the cross? Doesn't make any sense. So no one really knows, at least that I know personally, what's out there, what's coming, what are they trying to blur? But I want to take it a little bit further than that, and I want to liken it to Asimov's rules for a robot. Isaac Asimov, wild dude, man. Brilliant. He looked deep inside in the 40s. Deep inside the initiative of what if we were to turn on robots to exist with man. We would need a code of ethics, a code of possibilities to restrict those robots from taking over our world. And in the 1956 movie Forbidden Planet, which is when I did my movie review, I forgot to actually say the name, unfortunately. Robbie the Robot had these imperatives, but they didn't give any credit to Asimov for it. But there was a point where Morbius was trying to teach Leslie Nielsen's character, who was the captain of the ship, you have nothing to worry about when it comes to Robbie the Robot. He could pull you apart, you know, with his bare hands, but he has programming that says he can't hurt humans. And so the example in the movie was, can I see your blaster? And he looks around and he's like, all right, gives him his blaster. Morbius gives it to Robbie the Robot and he goes, aim this thing right between the eyes of the captain. And, you know, everyone's kind of like, you know, Leslie's kind of like standing up. He's like, oh, fuck, I'm in the middle of like a weird planet in the middle of fucking the galaxy. This old guy could technically kill us all. Nobody would know. And then he goes, fire. And Robbie goes into this complete self-destruction mode. He starts turning red. They put a red gel over him inside the exposure of the film. And they drew all this electricity. And he's like, and he's like, cancel command, Robbie, or something like that. He goes back to normal. And he grabs the blaster, gives it back to the captain. He goes, if I had allowed him to continue, he would have burned out every circuit in his body. Because he's not allowed to do this. So, keep that in your head. The Asimov rules for a robot. You're not allowed to do anything that would either directly or indirectly affect the health of a human being. That's really what it boils down to. Well, think about guns. Guns, weapons of any kind, projectile weapons, who knows what the very first use of them were, right? Probably war. And then we sort of calmed down as a world. Sort of got done with that. But then again, the last several wars for the last 200 or 300 years have all been instigated by banks, paid for by banks, enabled by banks. But they were also designed to conquer people to get them under bank rule. Because these people are vicious psychopaths who will stop at nothing. It's bad news, man. So now, the bankers realized, oh shit, we didn't want the people to have this stuff. We wanted to have our soldiers, our mercenaries who fight for us, to have it. And so now they're trying to take them away from America. the last bastion. They don't worry about taking it away from anyone else. South America, maybe Africa. They don't worry about that. They want to form their big UN army, and they're just going to roll over those continents in 2 seconds. If they can't buy off the leaders to take the weapons away from their people in the first place, which they can, they'll just roll over anybody who's left. But now guns are part of like this heavily restricted thing because it takes away power from the bankers. So now what is the next weapon? The next weapon is information. And information comes in several different forms, doesn't it? The three most popular forms of information we have today in 2019, the 21st century, is text, audio, and video. The other kind of low-end combination are images. But text gets to communicate a complete paradigm of thinking, a shift that could either go for or against those that are trying to control the world. Audio is very powerful because audio is kind of like a human fingerprint. Our voices are all unique. As much as they might be similar, they are unique. Video? Well, geez. Depending on how the video is being represented, it's very telling sometimes of who did what, where, when, and how. You get to see it. The images, the reason why I kind of push them into their own little annex off to the side is that they can be easily constructed, manipulated, and it's a lot more difficult, but they are also very powerful, which is why when the image and the text are coming together to make something called a meme, it is one of the most powerful methods to figure out, or one of the most powerful methods to pass around to help people figure out those paradigm shifts, who's guilty, who's not, etc. For the first several years of the internet, when someone made an image of, say, Abraham Lincoln, and then they would put a quote off to the side and say, Abraham Lincoln said this, and they might give you a year, a time, a place, whatever, we believed it initially. How are we to look up and find out whether or not this was false? It was very difficult. Now it's a lot easier, and we know that virtually every brilliant person who's been quoted in a meme has had at least one quote about them that is fake. So now, let's say that they take this deep fake thing to level 10. We have people being accused of crimes on purpose with fake, on purpose created videos. And then they get into a court of law, and on purpose, they discover the fact that they're fake. And this happens two or three times in super high-profile cases. And they even orchestrate on their end of the deal that they believed it too. I'll give an example. Take one of the politicians in the Democratic Super PAC. I'll just let you pick. I won't even say a name. And that person is CG'd into, like, they take their face and their voice, think a bunch of things they've said in the past, or maybe it's not even something where they need to speak. And they portray them doing something that they never did. Or maybe something they did do, but in this particular case, it's a fake. So this goes through the courts, and it is dismissed in the eyes of the people. And then a second one, and then a third one. Maybe there's a politician that goes first, there's a Hollywood producer goes second, and some other corporate shill goes third. Maybe it's even some royal family member gets dragged into this. And they're going to do it in America, they'll do it in Great Britain, they'll do one in probably Australia, one in Europe. So all the sectors of the modern world get a little taste of this deception mechanism. And again, if that's the case, you're going to see deep fake everywhere during this cycle. So now, think about it. They run through all these cases intentionally, fucking up the quality of information that we have out there, such that again, when someone brings you a red-hot, red-handed photo or video of someone doing something, or an audio clip of someone saying something, you can't trust it anymore. And let's say that they dramatize this up to a point where, you know, people really were hurt. They may even take someone like an AOC or someone and just not tell them because they're abject morons to begin with, and so you drag them through court, you ruin their life for a couple of years, and of course they've got a big prize after the whole thing's over. maybe the person's in on it, maybe they're not. Be better if they weren't, because all the reactions would be genuine. And then they write a piece of legislation. Probably won't happen in America first. Could happen in America first. And what do? They demonize information. And they put sanctions on how information is distributed, but more threatening and more tyrannical. They start putting sanctions on software that can accomplish these tasks and saying, well, if you want to be a 3D artist, you're going to have to get a government certified pass, because you could mess with reality. You could make people panic. You could do a UFO somewhere. You could do, again, a person talking and saying something with an impersonator, that even if it's pretty obvious it's a fake, it could create a level of hysteria in the real world that you're a threat to national security, you're a threat to society as a whole. Again, let's review a couple things. Is it legal to go into a theater, whether it be a play or a movie theater, and scream fire? Now, nobody does this, but they used to do it every once in a while, I guess. I don't know if they were idiots or just pulling a gag. But the stampede of getting out of a theater got people killed at one point, and this became very illegal. It's an ancient thing. Is it okay for you to brandish a weapon? You got a weapon and it has no rounds in it at all. But you drive down the highway and everyone who pisses you off, you wave it at them and you scare them. You know, some people, I think most people would probably swerve their car to get away from that person in a way that would be so sudden that they could kill themselves, kill other people. And the person brandishing the weapon gets to drive home and laugh it off if there's such, if they're, you know, that level of a sociopath, right? And so that's why we have laws against doing those things. Framing people in general, well, there's plenty of laws against that sort of thing already. We don't need to pass new laws. But if we have a whole new breed of fakery out there, there could be a gigantic problem. Now, what I always find interesting, and most gun enthusiasts, and again, all that means is you fired a gun, you've learned how to use one, you use it sensibly, you lock it up sensibly, it never becomes an option with disputes. You know, you could have a spousal dispute, a neighbor dispute, and you never ever think about the fact you even own one. That's a responsible gun owner. However, someone breaks into your house, there's an earthquake, there's a hurricane, you can't keep your house shut, there's looting going on house to house, and you are there to protect your wares. That's where a Second Amendment person might, you know, hunker down. Okay. But we do have some crazies out there, and they go out and they use weapons in ways they're not supposed to use it. And this doesn't have to be a big, gigantic massacre. This could just be someone going into a liquor store and using it for no reason. It happens all the time. It's horrific. People who are willing to give them everything get shot before they even know that they have been asked to give anything over. I just watched a video last night where a poor guy was in a subway. I don't know where he was. I don't know what country he was, but some guy went up to him. I don't know, maybe it wasn't even a subway, but he pointed the gun at him. Guy had a backpack. And he pointed the gun at him and said, "Give me your backpack." And the guy kind of, okay. And then as soon as the guy grabbed the backpack, the dude instinctively reached down to grab it back. And the guy popped him in the head and he was dead. And the dude ran off with what? Maybe a couple $1,000 worth of hardware? Guarantee you, ain't nothing in my backpack worth my life. There's nothing in my pockets worth my life. Ever. You want my shit? There it is, buddy. Don't confuse me standing here with being resistant, because I ain't resistant. I don't even know if there's any possessions in my life besides human friendships and family that I would, fight to the death over. Okay. But they use those, let's just say they use that simple thought process to say, look, we don't allow you to brandish weapons. We don't allow you to call fire. We don't allow you to frame people. They drag a bunch of people through court. You see the pain. And they could just do a random stranger off the street. I mean, it could be some horrific little lawsuit that goes on for a long time. And so as they create these it'll be a fake. As they create these fake pieces of evidence with various types of software, the software will start to become a registered weapon. And so you'll have to register your use. And then every time you launch the package, you know, I'm just going to give you a fictitious example of how this could be in 10, 20 years. But imagine in order to launch the software, your computer has to be locked shut. It has to shake hands over the internet with some government server. You can't do anything. And if you use the product, they have complete right to watch you use the product. Every time you hit save, they have to get a copy of it. If you create a picture, they get to have a copy of it. It starts to lock down Photoshop, starts to lock down Maya and 3D Studio Max and Blender 3D and any other Terrigen product out there. Nuke. Everything. Everything that can create digital photography or movies or special effects becomes a threat to society. Well, how many times a day out of every convenience store and every human being out of these 8 billion roughly that we have on this planet run out and commit these crimes that I just noted, these ridiculous crimes, or any derivative thereof? Sure, there's tens of thousands in a day, but that's a fraction of a fraction of a percent. But who has to pay the price in the name of our freedom because they did those things? Again, it's really trying to stop anyone resisting the control apparatus. But because it's also capable of being filtered down to humanity, it also can be perceived as we need to get rid of guns because they can be used to do this thing. But there's that old saying, guns don't kill people, people kill people, right? And then you have some people that never held a gun in their life trying to suggest otherwise. Well, of the Turkish people that come to Tiananmen Square and stab a bunch of local residents with knives, whether or not they have a good reason, I don't know. I don't think they do. It's not the way to solve the problem. You could ban knives. You really could. You could drum that situation up. It's a legit situation. I don't think it's an FF. It's a legit thing. And so then you can't have knives in China. Well, I've seen Chinese food cooked a million times in China on YouTube, and they love butcher knives, and they have to cut their pork. And, you know, so what do? Do you register every butcher knife in a restaurant? You can't. You have to get out of a lock box. It's got a big chain on it. You know, it's like you can only get it a few feet away from the box to do your work. They can take it to levels of absolute absurdity if we don't wake up and start taking control over the absurdity. It's important, in my opinion, that we catch those that have done things for real. That if there are videos out there that are legit, we need to be able to see them. And again, it's just like, because a lot of people knee-jerk and they go, oh man, this stuff is so rancid that it would truly disturb society, and so we cannot allow society to see these. Well, I'm not talking about putting them on CNN.com or FoxNews.com or any of these public sites. It might be that just like in the real world, we have police officers and homicide detectives and coroners, and they have to go clean up messes in this world. People have hurt themselves, people accidentally hurt themselves, whatever. And if we don't have them, then every time there's a car accident, there'll be a bunch of stuff on the street, and no one's got the guts to go over to clean it up, or they may not legally be able to do it, right? So we have people that do things very specifically. So it may not ever be seen by us because we don't have those positions in the world to deal with that information. And it's not that they don't think that we could see it and survive, but they don't want to, no one has the time to figure out whether or not the soccer mom is going to have PTSD after seeing what Hillary might have done at Lolita Island or Bill Clinton at Lolita Island. They may not have it. It may ruin their life forever. And it quite frankly may ruin our lives, but we think we're tough enough to see it until we see it. And then it's like, oh my God, Can't unsee that. Again, I shared on this show in an episode that I have retired that was called essentially the 17 moment, where Anthony Weiner's computer, when analyzed by the New York Police Department, somebody said within the police department that some people took retirement after seeing what was in the insurance folder. One of the spouses of one of the people that saw it said that their spouse is now in therapy having seen what was in Weiner's insurance folder. We don't know if that's true. That came out. That's what was one of the elements that was rumored to be in the folder was, again, brought up in the House. I think it was the House hearing. It may have been a Senate hearing with the Google CEO guy. First question out of this guy's mouth. He even described it. I was so shocked. Part of me thinks it was described because it exists and they're trying to put it into the world of fiction already as quickly as possible. If you see that, it's not real. I would hope that the law enforcement, DOJ, whoever is going to process that information has a lot more information than just that, which then triangulates any piece of blatant evidence like that into being true. Meaning, if a little girl was harmed and killed in an extremely sick ritual, that we know who the girl was, we know that she was shipped to the island, and that she never came out of that place alive. And by a certain age, she didn't exist on the island. That's what we need to know, all that information. At least the people that would enforce such a crime. Enforce the punishment on such a crime. Now, what happens in news today, and there are legal reasons for this, so I understand some of this, but one of the reasons why I agreed to do MKUltra Radio before this show was that I was sick and tired of red-handed things being referenced in news as allegedly. Or a red-handed guilty person being called a suspect. When we know for a fact that these things occurred based on the evidence that we have discovered. I mean, it's crazy. You would see, you know, Joe Biden doesn't allegedly touch girls on C-SPAN. He did touch girls on C-SPAN. He touched them in ways that in several areas of the world, Joe would be dead. If the fathers really figured out what occurred. And it wouldn't even matter if he was a politician or whatever. It would take the Secret Service everything they've got to keep this guy alive. But it wasn't revealed because everyone's looking the other way because we have these too big to fail sort of things, too big to be incarcerated things. We've got laws. You know, maybe there, you know, there is this thing that Mueller tried to throw out. When, what a piece of shit this guy is. God damn. Yeah, it's really weird. It's really strange. I just want to say, like I talked about it recently in a video where, you know, people with Hitler's last name have a hard time in some areas of the world, of course. But I think people with the name Comey, Mueller, all these names, it should be tough to have that name after what these scumbags did. And just the weenie fucking lies these guys told. But he was basically going up and saying, he couldn't announce that he had found a crime against Trump because there's a law that says you can't charge an acting president with a crime. And that's a complete lie. Yes, you can't charge an acting president with a crime outright, you know, but what do you think impeachment is? You find the crime, you announce it to the world, and you say, hey, world, I can't charge this guy with this crime because he's currently the president. So I'm going to hand it over to the House to evaluate the crime, and I'm going to have the House impeach him on the crime. But even this Nadler piece of shit guy, he's talking about impeachment. But we're all waiting for what crime do you have? Crime. Like anyone else in the normal world would go to jail for it. Nothing. Zero. It's a big nothing burger. You know, how many times in history has man achieved a level of freedom either through, you know, jumping over an ocean and creating places like America, or, again, getting Magna Carta signed, or growing up in some Egyptian utopia? No one's lying to each other and no one's, you know, believing that crime is a way to live. And Babylonia seems like it was one of those places too, way back in the day. But even they wrote in their history books sort of fables of their politicians and their controllers getting corrupt, and then every 300 so years, you know, replacing those individuals with good people, and then it was just a matter of a cycle before they got corrupt. And it was interesting that we didn't learn from that. But how many times have you talked to an older person and they'll say, well, you know, back in my day, we didn't have this kind of stuff. But now we do. Never would have thought we wouldn't be able to own gold. I mean, ask anybody, and these people are no longer with us, probably in any sentient way, but anybody who was a grown-up in the 1920s, who, when Roosevelt sold us out to the bankers and seized the gold in America by 1934 and shipped it off to, you know, Fort Knox, supposedly, who would have thought that that was even possible? This is my sovereign fucking property, man. This ain't yours. Don't give me your shitty fucking fiat paper currency. I got gold, baby. This stuff doesn't lose value. Your paper loses value. You give me my paper worth of that gold, and then you can do whatever you want with your paper. That's what happened. Who would have ever thought in the late 30s that they were about to do an FF to do Pearl Harbor? It's a matter of the history books now. Who would have ever thought they would have been able to do it for Vietnam, to start that war? A fake event. Two fake events that never happened. But that's the way we started a war. Senseless, ridiculous war with no positivity for our side. And we're just pawns in the game, man. It's like Black Sabbath songs, War Pigs, man. We're just pawns in chess until we perceive ourselves as true sovereign beings that have equal power. If you work for a newspaper, for instance, and you're a writer, you have research teams, you have legal teams, you've got your editor over you making sure you don't write about things that, their true initial purpose was to make sure that whatever was published in the rag, whether it be a magazine or a newspaper, was actually interesting enough that people would want to buy the newspaper for it. That was the major goal of it. But if you're going to cite or accuse someone of something, you needed to have a research team, a legal team. They have to look over what you're saying because they have to make sure you're not falsely accusing someone of something, and then they come back on the newspaper for defamation and they sue you for millions of bucks. Now, we know that tabloids do this all the time. But what they do is no mystery to anyone, but they will actually go to a law firm and or their legal team internally, and they'll say, we're going to do this fake story on somebody. Brad Pitt had a lot of this on him. We're going to report this thing about Brad Pitt, and it's all fake. But you know what? I think we're going to be able to sell, 10 million issues of this. I don't know what that Inquirer costs, I don't know. But they make $50 million off this story, this cover story, this fake accusation. And they know, the law firm says, well, he's probably going to be able to sue you, for sure, if he goes for it. It's going to probably cost us a couple of million dollars to fight it in court. We're definitely going to drain his side, but he's probably going to get us for his attorney fees as well. And then he's going to get a settlement from us. We're going to be able to buy him off on the side. And, you know, it'll make us look bad for 6 days, and then no one gives a shit anymore because it's the Inquirer. But they will have made, this is all fictitious, of course, but they may have found a way to make $45 million off that issue, pay him $2 or $3 million to be quiet, pay off the attorney's fees, which might be another $2 or $3 million. Maybe they're out $5 to $10 million bucks. Maybe in a worst-case scenario, they have to pay out like $35 million. But that cover story sold $50 million worth of paper and ink. All right. Sounds like a business to me, doesn't it? At no point does the newspaper ever get shut all the way down. At no point does anyone get fired. So there's all kinds of methodologies to report fake stuff and lie and get away with it, to control people. The paparazzi are there to control the apparatus of teeny bop control over teeny bop minds. So I've said this before. I'm going to keep repeating it. I never see it discussed in the Facebook group because it's a high-end concept. But back in the Greek theater days, they had it opened up for entertainment first. Then someone started writing like typology plays about the current leadership in Greece, exposing the fact that they had corrupt leaders, and plays have been at least written in the history books as being responsible at times for uprisings and the replacements of the governments from changing complete paradigms of how they run their country. And eventually the politicians figured this out and started killing the playwrights and started killing anybody who participated in acting out plays that would hurt them in the paradigm perception of the people. And this kept all the way up through Rome. If any of you watch the remake of Romeo and Juliet with Gwyneth Paltrow, there was the thing that this Shakespeare guy, it's probably Francis Bacon, but he had to put all of his scripts through the royal, you know, offices to make sure that they weren't going to hurt the queen or the king. Probably king at that time. Can't remember. Some of you might remember the series on TV called The Crown. And it's about Queen Elizabeth and the whole family. Charles, Prince Philip, Princess Di, all those people. And they have talked about the fact that in Britain, those scripts are written. They're sent over to the Buckingham Palace or wherever. And they are mulled over by quote-unquote historians and PR people that work for the Queen to ensure that even though they're going to, you know, insinuate some things about the Queen that weren't that flattering, that they have to kick it up with an uptick at the end that says, but she overcame that and that's why she's your Queen. And one of the arcs that they put through, which I thought was amazing that it got made, was that they said that at one point she wasn't that smart, and the actress that plays her is phenomenal, but they said that she wasn't that smart and that she took it into her own hands to become intelligent. Remember, they didn't want her to go to Africa and represent the dynasty, and then she had a sister who was a baller who had the same kind of thing. She was really good with people, but she was also very free spirit. And so they were always trying to control things. So it still happens to this day. I have been told as a writer in Hollywood that, you know, if I'm to write, say, the Eiffel Tower into my script or some other Taj Mahal or something, that the governments of those countries have exclusive rights on how those entities are portrayed in my script. That I don't know how you can demonize those structures, but they don't want certain things to happen in their structures. Like if I were to probably write something that was like, okay, you know, the Eiffel Tower is gigantic, right? And if I said, okay, inside one of the mid-tiers of the Eiffel Tower is a speakeasy where a bunch of nasty stuff happened, they probably wouldn't allow it. Because they don't want anyone to perceive this tower as being anything other than what it is. And that makes sense. You wouldn't want anyone to say something bad about whatever monument in the United States that you prize. I personally fear that the deep fake can turn into a complete control apparatus on top of how information is generated in this world. Believe me, they want you to be sweating in your palms as a blog writer with this perceived First Amendment. The reason why I mentioned the newspapers and how they do their thing is that they know that a blogger can say whatever they want. You know, there's defamation laws and all the laws that we have on the books, and they still apply to a blogger. But they know that there's a lot of exposure that's been going on for the last 20 years. It really started blowing up. But things like loose change would never have been allowed to be made if they had total control over the insinuations of that film. If you haven't seen it, shame on you. Go see it. Go see the very, very first one released in 2005. Don't look at all the remakes and the because they scrubbed it. They scrubbed it down. Having paid attention to everything I've paid attention to, and especially this technology that's coming out that's fueling the deep fake movement, a lot of the things that they said in that first version were real, and they backed down because they were kids. And, you know, you gotta think things through. If you haven't lived your life and you haven't had your kids and your family, and you got a bunch of black suits on your doorstep saying, if you don't change this, and we will help you change it, make you look like you're still independent, but, you know, you're going to be under our thumb for the rest of your life, you're going to be surveyed for the rest of your life, you better be good. You know, and literally, they probably sit down and just go, look, you made your mark. Okay, kid, you did your thing. Yeah. So, you know, when you're out there by yourself thinking about things in your backyard, just realize, yeah, you got us. You nailed us on the chin. Just be thankful we're not being told to liquidate you. So just go about your life, be quiet, and the kids do what they got to do. Maybe we do the same thing. You never know, man. How many times have you guys walked into a place where you just didn't feel safe? Or even more subtle, you didn't feel invited. You felt out of place. I went into a bar in Sydney, Australia. It was interesting. I was trying to find a decent drink. I don't drink much, but I had had a big day, and I was just like, you know, let's just see what it's like. Went into this bar. It took me forever to find a bar that served alcohol. It was strange. It wasn't full of like a ton of hipsters and, you know, wasn't like, again, I wasn't their kind. So it was like walking into the fucking cantina in Tatooine and I was a robot. But anyway, I found a place and it looked like a bunch of people my age and they were chewing up some sports show or something like that. And I went in and, probably got the worst old-fashioned I've ever been served in my life for a ridiculously high price. I mean, seriously, the worst drink of. It's like they didn't understand what the drink was or whatever. It was bad. But they poured so much ice in this drink that about four sips and I was done. I was like, oh, that's $15, huh? I'm not in an airport, man. I'm downtown Sydney. You know, I guess I was supposed to drink beer. That was the thing going around most of the time. But they want to be able to create that atmosphere around you on your phone. They want to be able to make you feel like that in your living room, in your office, wherever you're doing your social media. Because, and this is no surprise to any of you, the conformity pressure is huge. You know, I get it all the time as being the host of the show. I get, you know, flat earth conformity conversations going. People, you know, basically telling me if I don't believe what they believe, then they're going to unsub or whatever, you know, mark all my videos down or whatever. And it's like, knock yourself out, dude. You were hardly any pressure for me, trust me. But then I've got other people that are fantastic about it and they approach me very intelligently and they say, you know, if I'm able to conduct this experiment and get the result that would otherwise prove that it's not what you think it is, round versus flat or whatever, would you believe me? And man, those are the best kind of conversations you can get into. And that's one reason why I think that if you believe in something that's completely different and you're being called a conspiracy person, you know, I think one of the things we would want to do is make sure that we do all of our research that we can. And again, I just did an episode on gravity for deniers, and I know it's kind of a sort of a sketchy kind of episode for my channel because there's a lot of folks that have issues with it. But I've been getting responses, and there's a bunch of great responses. One person replied and said, air pressure makes sense, gravity doesn't. And right there, I can tell you that within the first, I don't know, 2 or 3 months of high school physics, they'll teach you that if you vacuum a chamber of any pressure and you put a feather in there before you start the experiment, the feather still falls perfectly fine. Falls a little faster because there's no air resistance whatsoever, but there's no pressure in there. And gravity exists inside the cube. Gravity is not air pressure. Now, does air pressure contribute to gravity? Well, sure, absolutely. What do you think? Why do you think you fall to the bottom of the ocean when you go down below, what is it, 35, 70 feet, somewhere in that realm? You'll go right to the bottom of the ocean. Air and water are basically the same exact liquid behavior. And so, yeah, I've got miles of oxygen above me. Now, it's flowing all over the place, but it is contributing to me being pushed down. If the atmosphere suddenly disappeared on Earth, I'm assuming we would feel a little bit lighter. But for the most part, we wouldn't float into space. Now, that would have to be a slow process, right? Because if you vacuum it off, we're probably going to get sucked up with the vacuum. But just in a pure sense, if it were to all float away for some reason, we'd feel a little lighter. But now, what's the world going to be like after this stuff turns on? What's it going to turn into? Well, you'll find out there's a lot of methodology about how I've created my episodes. Not so much in the past, although my past episodes, again, season one, are very benign self-help, self-improvement episodes. So those aren't going to be a victim of much. But if I were to express my opinion in for a lack of organized religion, maybe there's a little church thing that comes in there and says, well, you're hurting people's feelings, and fuck, the whole world's turned into a feeling joint. And you're going to have, you know, we're banning your video. We're taking it offline. You could have written an article a long time ago mentioning a particular person's name and saying how much they're horrible. I do it all the time on the show, right? And it'll be illegal. They could scrub all the videos off everyone's cloud storage. They could, you know, your operating systems could one day scrape it off your hard drives, off your DVRs. So there's certain pieces of empirical evidence we have, like Joe Biden touching girls. What if they got rid of all of his videos off your hard drives, off your RAM sticks? There's some EMP event or whatever, and they know it just doesn't exist anymore. And so now if you talk about those events, they know that there's no proof that you're telling the truth anymore, except for people's memories in their mind's eye. And there you go. They've completely restructured the memory of society. So when you write an article, the second you try to publish it, maybe it goes through some AI bot that goes, nope, you can't publish this article. You said these words. And it may be on a fringy case, they say, okay, we think you've said something that's not allowed, so we're propagating your article to a human being that you're going to have to pay for. And if it falls through all these processes, then you can get your article published. Completely controlled. Remember Rollerball 1975. Jonathan E. tries to find out how executive decisions are made, tries to check out books from the library about executive decisions. He gets to the librarian, which is really not a librarian, more of a receptionist, and she says, well, all of the books that you are asking for have been paraphrased in the corporate database, which you have access to at your house. Why don't you just look that up? And he's like, I don't want that. I want the truth, right? I'm sorry. And he goes, you're not a librarian. No. And there really are no books. No. So he goes to Geneva to try and find the truth from a supercomputer and finds out that the gentleman said, we lost the 12th century this morning. What is one of the major problems we have with being on Earth today? We don't know where we came from. We don't. Oh, you can have belief systems about where you came from. You could believe we were dropped off by aliens. You could believe that Jesus Christ was real and God made us just 4,500 years ago. You could believe in evolution and the Big Bang, but you have no proof of any of that stuff being real. Oh, you can interpret data to give yourself a bump. I do it. You do it. They do it. We're all trying to figure that out. But now we look back and we say, well, it makes sense that man doesn't have the really old past because there was no storage devices. There were only a few written languages. You know, the Sumerian mud tablets are pretty fragile. They're also impossible to carbon date, so someone could have written a bunch of that stuff and submitted as truth. They could do one right next to one that's real, and, you know, that mud's going to age to mud, you know. You won't be able to determine how old it is. I want to do an episode on carbon dating. I've gone down that rabbit hole a couple times. I need to do that again because I've completely forgot what the dispute is about that. But is there any excuse for us losing modern history? You know, since Roman times, they have been writing stuff down feverishly. You know, we know that previous civilizations have written, you know, the Greeks did really good job. You know, there's tons of Egyptian stuff and Babylonian stuff and Chinese stuff and so on and so forth. But, you know, once the printing press really came around, history was fairly well documented. But obviously when the printing press reached like the 1700s, 1800s, things were immaculately documented. But then we had yellow journalism come in America and really screw everything up. Then we had propaganda. Newspapers, televisions, magazines, the Mockingbird Project, which was literally designed to destroy the integrity of information. Your perception of yourself and your country and history and who's your enemies was all controlled. This deep fake thing is threatening the very next level of integrity. It is being pushed out there for the reason to make sure that whatever comes down the pike is perceived as unreliable, when perhaps it is absolutely 100% the proof that you need to put people away in jail forever, to keep the evil away from your children, to keep the evil away from your economy and your education. Now, I want to take you down a small path as we close this episode out, because it's something I think about every once in a while. I might have mentioned it in one episode out of 400. But the big question is this: is it possible to simply join them, to give them everything that they wanted, give them your guns, give them your freedom of speech, give them their big giant world army, let them go through with their 200 to 10,000 year plan, do everything that Huxley talked about, do everything that 1984 warned us against, and somehow we're going to end up with a utopian world? I think that the number one reason why most of us, you know, puke in our mouth a little bit when we think about that is that we know that there has never been a sense of generosity, empathy, sympathy towards man since we've been alive when it comes to the individuals that are truly considered the ruling class. The only time we experience these things in a fluidity that is palatable is that we have our parents, our grandparents, our friends, people who run great mom-and-pop stores or companies. That's when you see things go right. And believe me, they understand that. For the very first time in my forced research by going to my lounge, we're starting to see some mainstream articles about individuals that work for Google becoming disgruntled and starting to reveal some of this stuff that's been hidden internally. And Apple went through this as well. I think a lot of companies go through this. But they've reached a critical mass where they're unable to keep everyone happy. And so, you know, Uber's going through it. Uber just reduced their drivers' pay by 25%. I mean, that's so much money. I've had a ton of my friends that used to drive for Uber stop driving for Uber because they sanctioned the Uber driver down to 12 hours with a break forced in the center, which I don't think is necessarily a bad idea, because I don't want him falling asleep or anything. But now they're reducing their pay, and they're reducing their pay because Lyft went public, and now Uber wants to go public, and your public evaluation is based on how much money you generate versus how much money you save. Google did the same thing. When they went public, they did the November update, and they screwed with everyone's organic search. It no longer works anymore. You have to have a campaign that you pay for before your company's anywhere near the first 10 pages of search results, meaning, you know, you're going to have to be buying all of your customers from Google. Again, the way I always give you the analogy, because I had a bunch of people on literally the number one slot on Yahoo, MSN search, and Google search. They were at the tippy top in Orange County, making tons of cash. We didn't pay a dime. I just built the site right, indexed it right. But nowadays, you could need a plumber for the shit that's all backed up in your house. There's a plumber next door to your house. Has his own business. And for whatever reason, you don't know. Maybe he's a block over, so you don't see his truck every day. But you do a Google search now, and they're going to send you off to some big, giant plumbing company that's going to charge way more, put you off for 2 or 3 days, do a shitty job at it, when the guy right across the street could do it for you, but he can't get his website to show up. You know, one of the biggest things going on, it's probably their last few years of life, but Yelp. Yelp has a problem that they, one, that you trust what random people say about a place is sort of nuts. You shouldn't. But when you open a new restaurant or a new service, you know, brick and mortar location, you obviously can get a Yelp entry, and someone can create a Yelp entry for you, or you can create one for yourself. And then everybody takes all their relatives and friends and says, go do a 5-star thing. They give away desserts if you can prove you did a 5-star review or whatever. They're not supposed to, but they do. And so they got 5 stars for a little while. And the public starts going and finding out it's not 5 stars. But then you get these 1-star ratings. And 1-star ratings are like, what did they do to you? I mean, did they set you on fire? I mean, again, it's a little absurd. The people that you really want to check out are your friends and family. Did your friends and family go there? Did they like it? Because they're like you. You guys go to restaurants together all the time anyway. So if your buddy likes it, you might like it. They haven't figured that out yet. But they do a couple things. They will actually call up a merchant and say, you know, we want you to buy some advertising from us, and then we'll help you get rid of some of these bad reviews on your site. Like, if anyone uses racial slurs or anything like that, or they fail to really make a case for anything that's really going on at the location, then those can get purged automatically, which is nice. It's a nice upgrade. But a lot of my friends run these businesses, and they're like, look, stop bothering me with your ads. Your business, your little apparatus there is the reason why I don't have customers. Because the competition, we had 2 Peruvian restaurants go at it here in Huntington Beach. It's kind of interesting. One of the chefs, the way the story went, and this is one of the owners telling me, one of the chefs didn't like where he worked. He was at the older Peruvian restaurant. So he loves cooking Peruvian food. He's a master at it. So he came over to the one that's closer to me. And so the other one found out. There's no legal poaching laws or anything. He had his 100% right to change his employer. They started getting all their customers to do 1-stars on the one that was close by. And I assure you, there's nothing you could order nor in any experience that you could get at that location that would be 1-star. You just can't. Guarantee it. The other weird one is I helped a buddy of mine. It was just me being a pedestrian. He has a car repair place. I used to use him all the time for my old car. And I created him a Yelp entry because he didn't have one. Because he's just kind of, he's tucked away in a little industrial area. Nobody knows he exists. The people who come are not really Yelpy kind of people. But I wanted him to be on the list when someone looks up car repair or restoration. I wanted him to at least be a part of the game. And so I created him his own Yelp thing. It's just a little submission thing. As long as you have an account, you're logged in, you can create a business entry for someone. Now, it's been almost 10 years since I did that. And now I'm getting calls on my phone. I'm getting emails from Yelp begging me to buy advertising for this business. And I keep replying and telling them, look, I don't have anything to do with that guy anymore. I didn't have anything to do with him really at the beginning. I certainly wouldn't put my money to advertise for his business. He's not interested in doing it. And so we have these weird things that come about. And I just fear that no matter what we do, we cannot get our marching orders from these psychopaths. There is no, if you can't beat them, join them. That doesn't work. I don't think it's ever worked ever, quite frankly. So keep your eyes peeled for all these posts in social media that are part of these you know, deep fake things where you're seeing, again, there's this compilation of Obama giving a speech with like, I don't know, like 8 different faces. And it was a speech he gave, I think, in the 90s or something. So he was a really young man. Or at least they use those photographs of him talking. This could be the next coup on our freedom. And so I want us to think about this. You know, again, the show's entire objective is to say, when we get control of this world, which we will, because old people die. Just like Charlie Chaplin said in his great American speech, his great dictator speech, excuse me. They die, we get to take over. We have to stop our children from becoming them. Meaning we have to treat each other better as human beings, because that's what creates a sociopath in the first place. If someone's awkward and a nerd, you got 2 choices. Shun them, and then you create them. You create these people that want to see the world burn, or lean in, take some time out of your super popular person schedule, and have a conversation with a human being that probably needs it a hell of a lot more than anyone else you're going to talk to. And yeah, you may be bored to death immediately. You may be offended, who knows? But that little bit of humanity will train them. Humanity's good, and let's have more conversations with humanity. And that person doesn't know how to talk well, doesn't know how to not talk about politics and religion, will maybe calm down their rhetoric and enjoy having more constructive conversations. They can still totally disagree with you. They shouldn't compromise their belief systems. Perhaps they'll do a little more research. Perhaps they'll find softer ways of saying things. And maybe they won't have the conversation at all. They'll just talk about the weather. So I want to get this out in season 4 before it's over. Because I think it's going to be a big summer item while I'm on break. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It's going to have all the links for the video, the audio, the social media, methods to donate, and the link to the new remastered season 1. Until next time, take care of yourself and someone else. And I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.